log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
Ask the followers of the remembrance if ye know not.
You're listening to the program The Key on IRIB English Radio with Shiraz Hossein Agha, a graduate of Islamic Seminary of Rome and a PhD in philosophy.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Welcome to our program The Key here at IRIB English Radio. I'm your host, Shiraz Agha. Thank you for joining us here today. Here at The Key and IRIB English Radio, we would like to offer our condolences to our listeners on the most grave month of Safar. And more specifically, we would like to offer our condolences to our listeners on the demise of the Holy Prophet sallallahu alayhi wa alihi wa sallam and the martyrdom of Imam Hassan alayhi salam, both of which occurred in this month and both of which we are approaching. Now, regarding the demise of the Holy Prophet, in a series of very significant and important events occurred very close to the demise of the Holy Prophet. These are very significant and important events. Some of these events occurred before the demise, right before the demise. Some of them occurred after the demise of the Holy Prophet. After the demise of the Holy Prophet, we have the event of Saqifa and the events that occurred after this. And before the demise of the Holy Prophet, we have certain very significant events. And all of these events are also tied up with the events that occurred after them. One of these events that occurred was the event which is known as the event of Dawate wal Qalam, ya Dawate wal Qirtas, the event of the pen and paper, or the event of the ink and the pen. What occurred in this event? Today we're going to examine what exactly occurred in this event and why is it significant. When the Prophet was on his deathbed, it has been narrated by both Sunni traditions as well as Shia traditions that when the Prophet was on his deathbed and he was in a state of sickness and illness, he asked those around him to bring him a piece of paper, some ink, and a pen so that, and these are the words of the tradition, that he could write a will for all of the Muslims, by means of which they would never be misled after him ever. When the Prophet, the traditions say that when the Prophet asked for this, some of his companions who were present around him and surrounding him became upset and, God forbid, accused the Prophet of being in a state of madness and speaking incoherently. They referred to the Prophet sallallahu alaihi wasallam in very derogatory terms. They said that this man, they didn't even call him with the name of his designation as Masalan Rasulullah, the Prophet of God, the Apostle of God. They called him in a very derogatory manner. They called him, this man is speaking incoherently, God forbid. This is where we know that in the Holy Quran it has been mentioned that ma yantiqu anil hawa, that the Prophet never speaks incoherently. He never speaks out of his own will. In huwa illa wahyun yuha. Whenever he speaks, it is through the direction and the order and the revelation of God. Nevertheless, these people said this. The Prophet became upset with when he heard this, and he became angry at this companion. This is known as the event of the paper and the pen. And it said that if the Prophet had intended to write a will in which he would specifically designate the commander of the faithful, Imam Ali alayhi salam, as his successor. Thank you for joining us here on The Key. We were looking at the event of the pen and paper. Until next time, assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
That was Shiraz Hussein Agha, a graduate of Islamic Seminary of Rome and a PhD in philosophy on the program The Key on IRIB English Radio.
You can also send your questions to englishradio@irib.ir.
Could you tell a little about yourself?
I'm Eric Shumanandi from India.
I was born actually in London, England.
I'm a journalist by profession.
I'm 20 years old and I'm a student of physics. My dad, who taught me the art of writing.
Listeners special.
In the name of God, the compassionate, the merciful. Salam, dear listeners, and warmest greetings to you all. Welcome to this week's edition of Listeners Special on this beautiful Sunday, October 3rd, 2021. Yes, it's autumn. I'm Atef Erfani, hosting this program today. And as you know, the Listeners Special program is the Sunday program where your views are presented through emails, letters, and your messages. So please contact us and tell us what you think about our broadcast. If you have any messages for our listeners around the world, then record your voice, send it to us, and get your voice heard in this Sunday program. Remember, Listeners Special is your program. It's your views that are important. So please keep us company until the end of the program. Welcome back. This is Listeners Special, your program. And as usual, many of you have taken the trouble of sending us reception reports. These reception reports are very useful to us, especially to our technicians and engineers, because these reception reports enable us to provide a better service to our listeners around the world. All of you who have sent in a reception report will be receiving an EQSL card in the time of pandemic. So, here, I appreciate those of our listeners who have sent us reception reports, including Mizanur Rahman from Bangladesh, who is one of our regular listeners, Denis Kosolapkin from Russia, and Richard Cook from the UK. So, Mizan, Dennis and Richard, we want you to know how much we value your support and commitment to IRIB English Radio. And many thanks to those of our listeners who have kindly sent us emails or letters from around the world, which I mentioned some of their names here, and later during the program I will read their emails or letters. First of all, Anjum Hussein, one of our regular listeners from Kashmir, has sent us an email. Michael Subert from Sweden has sent us an email. Michael is also one of our regular listeners. And Sultan Mahmoud Sarkar from Bangladesh, one of our old and regular listeners, has sent us this email. And also, again, another regular listener from Chile, Hector Friahofre, has sent us a an email. And the last but not the least in this program is an email from Yari Korhonen, one of our regular listeners. Many thanks for sending us these emails and letters from around the world. Dear listeners, please stay with us. I will be back with these great emails after a short music. Hello again, I'm back with an email from Kashmir. This email is from Anjum Hussain, one of our regular listeners. Anjum Hussain from Kashmir says, Salam and condolences on the eve of Arba'in of Ashura. I am a regular listener and I like and learn from all the programs you play, especially the ones focusing on morals and ethics and Islamic teachings. Enlightening us on socio-political issues is also a very good measure. Thanks for playing my interview around Ashura about Muharram in Kashmir. I will be writing to you more soon. First of all, salam and warmest greetings to you, Anjum Hussain from Kashmir, one of our regular listeners. Anjum Hussain, many thanks for writing this email to IRIB English Radio. Of course, at the time we are reading your email, a few days has passed since the Arba'in ritual. Thank you for expressing condolences on the Arba'in ritual, which is, for your information, dear listeners, the anniversary of 40th days passed after the tragic martyrdom of Imam Hussein, peace upon him, and his 72 companions. Imam Hussein is the third infallible heir of Prophet Muhammad, blessings of God upon him and his progeny. We also, again, of course, a few days has passed since the Arba'in ritual, but we also do express our condolences on the tragic martyrdom of Imam Hussein and his companions. Anyway, it seems that you like the programs on, Arba'in, Ashura, and the special programs of Muharram and Safar. So, as you said, these programs enlighten the listeners on social, political issues, and many thanks for your support, your encouragement, and commitment to our radio. It seems that your interview with IRB English Radio was broadcast recently, then that's great. Yes, we broadcast these interviews in our programs, especially in Listeners Special, so that's great. And Jom Hussein from Kashmir, again, thank you for writing to us. So we are looking forward for another email from you, Anjum Hussain from Kashmir. And from Sweden, we have another email from one of our regular listeners, from Michael Sjöberg. Michael, I wish I'm right in pronouncing your name, Sjöberg. If there is any problem, please let us know about it. Michael from Sweden says, Dear producer, many thanks for the nice EQSL you sent me a few days ago. I like EQSLs. Better for the environment, cost effective, and it is indeed a quick way to confirm reports. But maybe you can reply with a physical QSL card 1 or 2 months a year. And on a special broadcast, a public holiday, or similar. That would be a great idea, I think. Kind regards. Salam and warm greetings to you, Michael Suber from Sweden. And I do express my appreciations to you for sending us this email from Sweden. So it seems that you like the EQSL, as you may know. We send our dear listeners these EQSLs at a time of pandemic because sending paper QSLs is not possible in the time of pandemic. So you can be patient after the coronavirus is over, and then we can send you our promotional items and, of course, the paper QSL cards. Many thanks for writing to IRIB English Radio. Write to us soon and tell us your views about IRIB English Radio. Dear listeners, after a short break, I will be back with other emails from around the world, and this time from Bangladesh, from Sultan Mahmud Sarkar. Welcome back. As I said, here we have an email from one of our regular listeners, from Sultan Mahmud Sarkar from Bangladesh. Let's see what he says. Hello, dear IRIB English Radio. First of all, take my special greetings from Bangladesh. Hope you are well with all the friends of IRIB English Radio. I listen to your programs regularly. Unfortunately, I haven't been able to write for you an email for several weeks. I love IRIB English Radio. I love Iranian culture. Iran is worth to be respected for the way it is moving, ignoring the hegemony of America and the West. I wish you all good health during the horrible pandemic. All the best. And special salam and greetings to you from Iran, Sultan Mahmud Sarkar from Bangladesh, and warm thanks to you for sending us this great email. And we also wish you all good health during this horrible pandemic. We wish you all good things and good job during this time. As you said, we are in the time of pandemic. And so my colleagues will soon send you an EQSL card, Sultan Mahmud Sarkar from Bangladesh. And we're so happy that you love our programs. As you said, you love IRIB English Radio, you love Iranian culture, and that's great. So we hope this mutual relationship between IRIB English Radio and you continue until the end. So write to us soon, and of course, tell us your views about our programs. And from Chile, we have an email from Hector Furia-Jofre, from one of our regular listeners. Hector says, "Dear friends at IRIB English Radio, please accept my greetings from the city of Santiago, Chile. Regarding listening to the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran, I am always attentive, but the bad propagation has not allowed me to have the opportunity to tune in to your radio regularly. However, I do hope that the technical problem will be solved very soon. I will be able to listen to your programs and appreciate the traditional music and interesting programs. Best regards from Santiago." Hector Friahofer from Chile, salam and warmest greetings to you from Iran. Many thanks for sending us this email. I don't know actually what you mean by bad propagation, but I hope this problem soon will be solved, and you could be able to listen to our programs, as you said. But maybe at a time you have problem to tune in to IRIB English Radio programs, maybe you can refer to our website, www.parstoday.com/en, and there you can also find the online radio and the archive of the programs. I know most of you love the shortwave radio and traditional radio, but you know, maybe you have sometimes the problem and you lose the opportunity to tune into IRIB English Radio, then you can refer to our website. So many thanks for writing to us anyway. Hector, write to us soon and tell us your views about our program. Dear listeners, after a short break, I will be back with an email from Finland. here, I'm back with an email from Finland from Jari Kurhonen. Jari Kurhonen, one of our regular listeners, says, hello from Finland. I was able to hear this signal of IRIB English Radio from Iran. The signal was poor to fair for a while, but the station faded out soon after it had given the station identification. I enclose MP3 clips about the reception. It would be a pleasure to receive a verification from you. Best regards. Salam and warm greetings to you from Iran, Jari Kurhonen from Finland, and thank you for sending us this email. And what a pity you had the problem in listening to IRIB English radio programs. So maybe we can inform our technicians and engineers about this problem and soon your problem be solved. You know, we received the MP3 clips you sent to us. Thank you for that. My colleague will soon send you an EQSL card. Jari Kurhonen from Finland, write to us soon and tell us your views about our programs. Wishing you all the best and, of course, health and safety in your life, we wrap up this week's edition of Listeners Special. Keep in touch with us and have a good time.
Listeners, your opinion is always important to us. We invite you to spend just a few minutes writing us a letter or sending us an email. We'll be glad to hear from all of our listeners who have any questions or comments about any of our programs. Our postal address is IRIB English Service, PO Box number 19395-6767, Tehran, Islamic Republic of Iran. You can also send your emails to EnglishRadio@irib.ir. That is one word, EnglishRadio@irib.ir. Please visit our website at www.pasttoday.com/en. Our phone number is 00982122013720. Once again, our phone number is 00982122013720. Our profile is also in Facebook. Our address is www.facebook.com/pasttodayenglish. Thank you all for being with IRIB English Radio.
Insights into the Holy Quran.
Indeed, this Quran guides to what is most upright and gives the good news to the faithful who do righteous deeds. that there is a great reward for them.
In the name of Allah, the Compassionate, the Merciful, dear listeners of IRIB English Radio, Assalamu Alaikum. Welcome to another edition of the program, Insights into the Holy Quran, by Sayyid Muhammad Hassan Mudarrisi, a graduate of the Hawza Seminary of Qom. Please stay with us.
A'udhu billahi minash shaytanir rajim. Bismillahir Rahmanir Rahim. In the name of Allah, the Beneficent, the Merciful. Hello everyone, dear brothers and sisters. I am Sayyid Muhammad Hassan Mudarrisi, and we're with you with another edition of the program Insights into the Holy Quran. In this edition of the program, we'll be discussing the commentary of the 23rd chapter of the Holy Quran, Suratul Mu'minun, or the Believers. Now let's just listen to the related verses and then we'll be back. So stay with us.
Bismillahir Rahmanir Rahim.
In the name of Allah, the entirely merciful, the especially merciful. Say, O Muhammad, to whom belongs the earth and whoever is in it, if you should know. They will say, to Allah, say, then will you not remember? Say, who is Lord of the seven heavens and Lord of the great throne? They will say, they belong to Allah. Say, then will you not fear him?
Brothers and sisters, we finished talking about the 83rd verse of this chapter, and we can now move on to the next couple of verses to be discussed. The 84th verse starts saying, قُلْ لِمَنِ الْأَرْضُ وَمَنْ فِيهَا إِن كُنْتُمْ تَعْلَمُونَ. Say, whose is the earth and whosoever is in it, if you have knowledge? سَيَقُولُونَ لِلَّهِ. They will say, Allah's. قُلْ أَفَلَا تَذَكَّرُونَ. Say, will you not then remember? And then the next verse says, قُلْ مَنْ رَبُّ السَّمَاوَاتِ السَّبْعِ وَرَبُّ الْعَرْشِ الْعَظِيمِ. Say, who is the Lord of the seven heavens and the Lord of the mighty throne? سَيَقُولُونَ لِلَّهِ قُلْ أَفَلَا تَتَّقُونَ. They will say, Allah's. Say, will you not then keep from evil? Since the unbelievers and the polytheists were more afraid of the resurrection than anything else, they consequently avoided it. They avoided their responsibilities by making various kinds of excuses and using delicate tricks. The Holy Quran placed emphasis on resurrection and elaborately is going to explain it. So, in these verses under discussion, the Holy Quran refutes the faulty logic of the rejecters of resurrection with three arguments. Allah's ownership of the world of existence, His lordship, and His sovereignty over the whole world of existence. The conclusion is that from every aspect, Almighty Allah is capable of causing resurrection, and His justice and wisdom necessitate that the hereafter must be a reality after the end of this world. And the noteworthy point regarding these couple of verses is that in the answers to every one of the questions posed in these verses, the unbelievers confess that the reality of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala as the Lord and Master is true, and they contradict their very attitude and belief.
We hope and pray that Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala blesses us with the ability to cover more of His divine
In this
word.
Series of programs, we will inshallah discuss the Holy Quran with a thematic approach.
We will inshallah discuss the chapter.
وتمثل القرآن في أخلاقه وفعاله فيه الفؤاد تعلقا وتلاه في جنح الدجى متدبرا.
The context in which Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala speaks in this verse is the context of mentioning the ills and problems and evils of the people of the book, the previous nations who have received revelation, and more particularly the Jew.
Now let's listen to some of the verses of the Holy Quran.
First, let's listen to a few verses.
Now let's listen to some verses of the Holy Quran.
Insights into the Holy Quran. By Sayyid Muhammad Hassan Mudarrisi, a graduate of the Hausa Seminary of Qom.
At first, the Holy Quran announces, قُلْ لِمَنِ الْأَرْضُ وَمَنْ فِيهَا إِن كُنْتُمْ تَعْلَمُونَ. Say, whose is the earth and whosoever is in it, if you have knowledge. Here is their answer. سيقولون لله قل أفلا تذكرون. Say, will you not then remember? So this clear answer is based on their innate disposition that testifies to the belief in Allah, the creator of the existence. As you may have noted, this answer is contradicting the egoistic claim that issue from their mouths, and because of this the Holy Quran replies to them, أَفَلَا تَذَكَّرُونَ. Will you not then remember? After such a clear and explicit confession, how could they think that a human being's resurrection after death would be unlikely and beyond Almighty Allah's all-embracing power? So, in 84 and 85th verses of this chapter, we had a quick and short question and answer from the Prophet and the answer from the polytheist. Now let's move on to the next question. The Holy Quran is ordering that the unbelievers should be asked again by the Prophet, قُلْ مَنْ رَبُّ السَّمَاوَاتِ السَّبْعِ وَرَبُّ الْعَرْشِ الْعَظِيمِ. Say, who is the Lord of seven heavens and the Lord of mighty throne? سَيْقُولُونَ لِلَّهِ. They will say, Allah's. قُلْ أَفَلَا تَتَّقُونَ. Say, will you not then keep from evil? So, their answer, automatically out of their own innate monotheistic disposition and their belief in Allah as the creator of the whole existence, is this. It is Allah's. Whatever you say, it is Allah's, and we believe in it. But in spite of this explicit confession, they still do not fear Allah. They continue denying resurrection, just like the previous verses. They continue to stay in transgression. They do not want to believe in the return of man to life again because of the very fact that they are completely afraid of it. So they are asked in response, أَفَلَا تَتَّقُونَ. Will you not then keep from evil? Meaning that if you try to keep yourselves from evil, you will find out the answer by your hearts and believe in the answer, although you know the answer but you do not want to believe in it. So there is a little bit of difference between knowing and believing in something. Also, the word Rabb means an owner who intends to maintain and manage his state, and the word Arsh mentioned in the 86th verse is used to mean the throne of Allah, which is beyond the seven heavens, as the traditions suggest. Thank you for staying with us in this program. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Don't be saddened by what you see, by all the lies and treachery. Life is cruel, but don't worry. In your heart lies the key to unwind all the secrets. This life we see.
Thank you, dear listeners of IRIB English, for listening to us. If you have any question regarding our programs, feel free to email us at englishradio@irib.ir. Also, visit our website at parsetoday.com. Until the next program, take care and goodbye.
If you're interested to know about history, culture, family, politics, religion, art, etc., you wouldn't want to miss the chance to tune into the IRIB English Radio. Please log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
Be aware, the hearts find rest in Allah's remembrance.
Spring of truth. Dear brothers and sisters, you are listening to The Spring of Truth from IRIB English Radio. I invite you to listen to a short part of the book Sirru Salat, The Secret of Prayer, written by Imam Khomeini. The Qiyam and the recitation is the agent Tawheed. Iyaka Na'budu is the returning of the servant to Allah toward the absolute annihilation. Because for each recitation and prostration and genuflection, there is a stage. Thus, Qiyam to the stage of agent Tawheed has been related, though it possesses the essential Tawheed and the attribute internally. And this the same words as the mystic utter about the names, attributes, verbs, and essence, though they consider each name as a collective comprehensive name in which the manifestation of the name is appeared. And the manifestation of the attribute and essential would be therein. And the same in namely attribute and the essential one.
A'udhu billahi minash shaitanir rajim. Bismillahir rahmanir rahim. Dear listeners, assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. And you are listening to Spring of Truth coming to you from IRIB English Radio. So stay tuned with us. I am your host, Abdullah Al-Musawi, an Islamic researcher at the Seminary of Qom. we are looking at Imam Khomeini's point of view when it comes to Ashura. Imam Khomeini was quoted saying, if people could truly understand and make it understood by others what all this is about, the lamentation, the mournings, and the eulogies, and why such high divine reward for a drop of tear shed for Imam Hussein, they would not call us the weeping nation. Rather, they would call us the nation of epic action. Imam Hussein, he himself said, I only made this revolution to seek reform. So through these cries, through these gatherings, through these mournings, we are trying to create reform. And we did. And first of which, Imam Khomeini, he himself, he created this massive revolution, toppled the government, changed an entire world. Not just that, but the whole world is facing it. The whole world, they are just powerless to do anything against it. They are powerless to stop it. And why is that? Because they are crying for Imam al-Hussein.
Ya Hayyu Ya Qayyum, Ya Hayyu Ya Qayyum, Ya Hayyu Ya Qayyum, Ya Hayyu Ya Qayyum.
If it was just a matter of logic, you couldn't just read a book and stay at home. You can just, I don't know, read the Quran and stay at home. But the idea is that we come every year. Not only should we listen to the lecture, not only should we just learn, but we need to lament and cry and beat our chest and have these things and make them continue and live. At the time of the Imams, alayhim as-salam, when they were living under oppressive rulers, they couldn't do much. They couldn't preach and lecture. But they instructed their fellows to sit and cry for Imam Hussein. That's it, just cry. Read a eulogy, beat your chest, cry for Imam Hussein, and keep it going. Keep that emotion flowing. Throughout this lamentation and this flowing of emotions, we got to have all these that we have today. All these lecturers, all these scholars standing on the pulpits. It's because of this crying. So don't just listen and go. Participate. Take a share in making sure that this continues to generations to come.
As-salamu alaykum wa rahmatullah.
At first, they merely suggested it. Now, they've done it. Hezbollah has successfully imported fuel from Iran into Lebanon. Lebanon has been suffering from a deepening economic crisis for almost 2 years now, with power cuts, food shortages, fuel shortages, and total devaluation of its currency. The whole point behind importing the fuel to try and mitigate this. Now, some argue that the shipment undermines Lebanese sovereignty. Others argue it's a victory for the resistance front, with people waving flags in celebration of the fuel's arrival. So why is this shipment so controversial? Has it helped mitigate Lebanon's economic crisis? And how does it affect the overall geopolitical landscape of the Middle East, when Syria, Iran, Hezbollah are all able to successfully bypass U.S. sanctions? I'm Richard Medhurst, and this is The Communique. Lebanon has been suffering from a severe economic crisis for almost 2 years now. Many factors have contributed to this, one being the political instability, the lack of a central government. Lebanon has only just recently been able to form a new government. Another is corruption. It's widespread. The so-called Ponzi scheme that has been going on for decades and is central to Lebanon's economy. the global pandemic with COVID-19, not to mention the Beirut port explosion. Both these things have made everything worse for Lebanon. Moreover, the war next door in Syria has also impacted the country severely, and vice versa, given how closely Syria and Lebanon's economies are interlinked. And last but not least, the external pressure on Lebanon from the West to try and exclude Hezbollah from the political process. All these things combined have led to a terrible situation where the Lebanese pound, or lira, has lost more than 90% of its value since October 2019. Lebanon's situation is so bad, Bloomberg reports that Lebanon's annual inflation rate is now the highest in the world, surpassing Zimbabwe and Venezuela. The result of this is that three-quarters of Lebanon's population now lives in poverty. Prescription and over-the-counter medicine alike are either unavailable or too expensive. Al Jazeera reports that on average, food items today cost 10 times more than what they did in 2019. The price of milk has increased sevenfold, rice 19-fold, cooking oil is 37 times more expensive. The World Food Program says that food prices have risen by 557% since 2019. Just to buy bread for one family, someone earning minimum wage would have to spend 44%, basically half, of their monthly salary. Lebanon is a country that imports 80% of its food, and right now, the food situation is further imperiled by fuel shortages and power cuts. The government just cannot supply people with enough electricity, so people either have no electricity, or most of the day they have to rely instead on private generators. Things like bakeries, for example, need diesel fuel to keep their generators running so they can stay open. But because there isn't enough fuel, instead they have to close, making bread scarce. The power cuts are so severe, people only have electricity for 4 hours, sometimes 2 hours a day. Not just bakeries, but hospitals and essential services have also warned that they are on the brink of collapse as they lack power and electricity to keep functioning. Ironically, even during parliamentary session, the power also went out, which Hezbollah offered to fix by bringing two generators. One of the guests joining me today from Beirut, his internet and electricity cut out in the middle of the interview as we were talking about these power cuts. The suffering of the people in Lebanon is widespread. Scenes like this are typical in Beirut. People queuing up for bread, people queuing up for fuel, hours at a time to try and get something if they're lucky. In August, the central bank announced that it can no longer afford to subsidize fuel. The problem of liquidity plagues Lebanon still as there is a shortage of foreign currency, especially US dollars. While officially, the Lebanese pound is pegged to the US dollar at a rate of 1,500 liras, the black market rate has done nothing but skyrocket with no end in sight. Currently, the rate hovers at around 15,000 Lebanese pounds to the dollar. Basic necessities are either too expensive for people to afford or simply not there. Joining me is Abbas Bazzi, Lebanese political activist and commentator. He's also a board member of the Al Awra organization. Thank you for coming on the show, Abbas. Could you maybe describe to us the economic situation in Lebanon in practical terms, what the crisis is like for everyday people?
Yeah, it's bad. I mean, it's always been tough. I guess it's gotten worse over the last couple of years since the economy tanked a couple of years ago. But now it seems like it's bottomed out, and things are getting really tough for the average Lebanese citizen. What happened is with the devaluation of the Lebanese lira, for a long time, from like I would say from 1997 forward, it was pegged at 1,500, and that sort of stabilized things for a while. But since the economic collapse of a couple of years ago, it went up to about 7,000, 8,000, and finally went up to about, the lowest was about 18,000. Now it's gone down to about 15,000. And it's tough because most people who work there, especially the ones that work for the government, get paid in lira, and their salary is the same. So if a person was getting paid, say like a million liras a month, which, prior to the economic collapse, would translate to roughly around $700, they're still getting paid a million liras, and now it's not worth $700 anymore. It's basically trying to live on $100 a month. So imagine trying to sustain a family on $100 a month. It's tough, and you couple that with a pandemic, and now you have the fuel shortage. I mean, Lebanon's always had a problem providing electricity for its citizens. Outside of Beirut, most people would get like 8 to 10 hours of electricity per day. Now it's down to about 1 hour. And there's a shortage of gasoline at the gas stations, but waiting in long lines to purchase. Just like they can't even fill up their gas tanks. They could probably get like a quarter tank or half a tank. So yeah, things are gotten really, really tough recently.
The government raised the price of fuel. Why did they do that after the first shipment arrived?
They didn't really raise up the price. What happened is they removed the subsidies for fuel, which consequently rose the price up. And the reason for that is because they claimed that they didn't have the funds to subsidize it anymore.
When we talk about a de facto American siege on Lebanon, what does one understand by this term? What role exactly is the United States playing in Lebanese politics?
Yeah, as far as the American siege on Lebanon, yeah, I mean, basically, you know, for the past couple of decades, the U.S. has done everything it can to try to break the resistance of Lebanon, and it has used I wouldn't even call them allies of the U.S. They're just pawns of the U.S., the politicians in Lebanon that the U.S. props up to try to disarm Hezbollah, which they don't have the political clout or the means to do that. But it's like the U.S. uses them, and they use the U.S. So basically it came to a situation to where the U.S. had no more cards to play. And now after Hezbollah broke the siege, now the U.S. is trying to play the role of, well, we can bring in gasoline from Egypt, fuel from Egypt, and we can bring electricity from Jordan, which the U.S. is basically breaking U.S. law because, as you know, the Caesar Act on Syria. So now the U.S. is forced to deal with Syria to try to save face in Lebanon.
The Lebanese Prime Minister Miqati said that the fuel shipments are a, quote, violation of Lebanese sovereignty. What do you make of that exactly? Why do you think he said that?
Yeah, I heard that. That was funny. It was hilarious, actually. What sovereignty is he talking about? Since when has Lebanon been a sovereign country? I mean, Lebanon was literally created through Sykes-Picot not to have any sort of sovereignty, just to weaken, you know, our people in the region, but to divide us. And Lebanon has never had any sort of sovereignty. So I'd like to know what's that. I mean, every political power in Lebanon is basically beholden to some sort of external power. So which sovereignty is he talking about that was violated? I mean, if there are some sovereign powers in Lebanon, let them bring fuel. I mean, we're out of, you know, the country's out of fuel. Bring fuel to Lebanon. Show us your sovereignty. Show us your ability. Bring fuel to the country. So this was an act of desperation by Hezbollah. I mean, it got to a point to where it was a national emergency. So if there's any kind of sovereignty that he's talking about, you know, to bring the sovereignty to the table and, bring fuel to the country.
So Abbas, just as a last question to follow up, this whole situation in Lebanon, what do you think will finally remedy it? What would you like to see happen for things to get better?
Boy, I don't know. I mean, long term, who knows? I mean, like all these things are right now, they're all, you know, short term band-aids. Long term, I mean, is that possible anytime soon? I'm not sure. I honestly don't know what the long term solution is. In my opinion, that's the best way is for all of us to unite under, you know, one central entity. But I don't know if the groundwork is there for that anytime soon. I think we need to look inward. You know, we need to stop relying on the West because, you know, we witness a Lebanon what will happen to you when you rely on the West. We mean nothing to them. We're expendable. They'll watch us, starve. We're totally expendable. So we need to look inward and find our solutions among ourselves.
Abbas Bazzi, great speaking with you. Thanks so much for coming on.
You do a great job. Keep up the great work.
Back in June, Hezbollah Secretary General Sayed Hassan Nasrallah suggested the idea of importing Iranian fuel into Lebanon. And just by merely bringing this up, Iraq went ahead and doubled its supply of crude oil to Lebanon from 500,000 to 1 million tons a year, likely at the discretion of the United States. Although crude oil does not exactly fix Lebanon's problem, as they are in need of fuel. 2 months later, on August 19th, Nasrallah announced fuel shipments from Iran were secured and confirmed. Immediately, the Americans rushed and scrambled to try and stop them. the American ambassador to Lebanon, Dorothy Shia, called up the Lebanese president, Michel Aoun. She explained that the United States would offer an alternative plan to secure Lebanon's energy needs and that they did not need Iran and Hezbollah. The American ambassador floated this extraordinary plan, which involves taking gas from Egypt, electricity from Jordan, and then sending them through Syria to Lebanon. It's quite funny, honestly. The United States is so desperate to undermine Iran and Hezbollah, it is willing to go to such lengths and undertake this extremely complicated process involving four countries just to give Lebanon power. Well, that's great, right? I mean, where was this plan before? Where was the United States rushing to help Lebanon with this intricate idea? As you remember, Syria is under U.S. sanctions, the Caesar Act. And yet, despite that, the United States is still willing to work with Syria, a country it has been at war with and sanctioning for 10 years. Meanwhile, Iran doesn't need to convert anything. It's just bringing diesel and benzene, already refined and ready to go. Nasrallah announced that there would be four shipments of fuel from Iran to Lebanon. Most of this would be diesel with a little bit of benzene as well. Remember that there is a tanker war in the region. Israel has sabotaged and attacked numerous Iranian ships bringing fuel to Syria. The United States has also pirated oil from Iran, headed to Venezuela, simply stealing it and selling it off. Nasrallah issued a warning, saying that the ships are to be regarded as Lebanese soil the moment they set sail, and that any attack on them would be considered an attack on Lebanese sovereignty. And with that said, two of the four ships have already arrived safely. The first ship docked on September 14th in the Syrian port of Banias. The diesel was offloaded into oil tankers and driven to the Lebanese border. And as part of the axis of resistance, Syria provided these trucks for free. President Assad sent the Syrian army to escort them and had all tariffs and taxes lifted. A convoy of 80 trucks carrying with them 4 million liters of fuel made the journey from Banias, and as they crossed over into Lebanon, scores of people lined the streets in celebration of their arrival, waving Syrian, Iranian, and Lebanese flags and holding up signs saying, "Thank you, Iran, thank you, Syria." In a more extravagant move, one person was so happy he decided to fire an RPG into the air to celebrate the fuel shipment. As Nasrallah had announced, the first shipment of fuel would be going to hospitals, nursing homes, the Lebanese Red Cross, special needs facilities, the fire department, and other essential services. 1 month's supply of fuel completely free of charge. The rest would be sold to everyone else later at below cost, cheap rates with zero profit. A week after the first shipment had arrived, the second oil tanker docked in Banias on September 23rd at 10 p.m. local time, with the other two ships expected in the coming weeks or months. We'll be right back after this short break.
Communique is a program in which Richard Medhurst, the independent journalist and political commentator, gives his views of controversial issues of our time and interviews famous politicians and personalities. This program is broadcast every Sunday by IRIB English Radio.
Now, joining me to discuss this further is Lebanese critic and journalist Pierre Abissab, specialized in the literary, artistic, and cultural life of the Arab world. He has worked for many newspapers, such as Al Hayat and Al Safir, and co-founded numerous others. Currently, he serves as the deputy editor of Al Akhbar, a daily Arabic language newspaper. Pierre Abissab, thanks so much for joining me today. It's a pleasure to have you on. So, Pierre, just to start off, how has this shipment of fuel affected Lebanon politically and economically?
Lebanon's economic situation is not just confined to the last months, during which the U.S. decided to starve the people and slap them with sanctions, like they did with Syria and the Caesar Act, with the encouragement of cartels controlling the distribution of fuel, or lack thereof, and not to mention the political stooges and pawns who work with the United States and Saudi Arabia in the hope that starving the people will create chaos and turn people's opinion against Hezbollah.